Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. I have a guest this evening that I've not been able to reach, so we're going to make this an open mic hour wherever you are. You are more than welcome to give me a call if you'd like to chat, and I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. And with my guest being on the East Coast, who knows what kind of weather they're going through, and we'll just see about, you know, having her perhaps in another program. So we'll just find out, because this is a lady who is pretty, you know, this is unusual for her. So anyway, Donna Sebo here. I am delighted to share this next hour with you. And again, if you'd like to call in during the hour, the telephone number to call into is 253-582-5597. Well, I wanted to start off the program this evening with a commentary. And the reason that I chose it is because I was with some wonderful friends this afternoon, and I thought our conversation, whenever we get together, we have a patterning where we like to get together and we'll have conversations that cover all kinds of subject matter. And at one point in the conversation, there was a concern because we were discussing old history, and there was a concern that, gee whiz, we're dwelling too much on the negative. Let's face it, when you go into history, no matter what country you are in the world, you are going to find that there are patterns that exist that go back for centuries that hopefully, eventually, mankind will realize is not necessary. But this is something that when I came across a commentary by Philip Golubic, I was so impressed with what he said that I thought that I would share that with you this evening in the program. Now, he was born in New York City, attended the University of Florida. He worked with a number of very special people, got degrees in philosophy, metaphysics, so many different things. And he's done a lot of writing. He felt that it was so important to be a contributor to life. And this is what his commentary was. I know how daunting it can all seem. 5 minutes of the so-called news is enough to depress anyone. But in the crossfire of the headlines, at a dark hour, with even scientific predictions of doomsday and self-annihilation, a quiet and heartening light persists. The planet keeps turning. Air remains breathable, although some of you in the fire areas might disagree with that. Children are still born, coming into the world radiant with innocence and eager to learn and discover and take their place in the great adventure. All natural evidence demonstrates that, despite everything, life still believes in us. Perhaps we ought to trust it and start believing in each other. I think his words are extraordinarily profound. Why? It is so easy to think that there's got to be one extreme or another. And I felt after the conversations that we had today, and I thought about them, and when I was reading Philip's commentary, I thought about that too. There's not a person I know of that's not going to get kicked in the teeth by life in one way or another. I have seen, I have experienced, and I say this with clarity. Anybody that would deny that would just, I don't know, it's just something you probably just don't get it. But we have to look, I say we have to look, because it's what I have had to learn. We need to be able to look at what we often like to describe as reality. And what that means is you need to be present with what is going on. Let's say you were a member of the National Guard, and you get called out on a rescue call. Now, you've gone through a lot of training. You are trained as much as they are, you know, possibly able to train you to deal with extreme circumstances. And you're trained over and over and over and over again, until you actually get up in that helicopter having to drop a basket onto a turbulent sea, and you're hovering in the middle of air, and you know that you're taking a risk, risking your life to go in to save people, and you're going to encounter situations that you could never have experienced in class. But because of your training, you have a sense of confidence and an awareness, and you have to think fast. You have to really respond quickly to whatever that emergency is. And that's why training is so important. Training will be tough. It'll be difficult. But you are, in the process, when you're going through that training, developing a resilience and a determination that you're going to be able to save lives. Sometimes you can't. So you have to deal with these variables, and I say you have to deal with them. You could choose to try to ignore them, but a lot of people end up having some very serious challenges when they ignore what's right in front of them. Do I believe in miracles? Absolutely. Do I believe in a lot of things that there's unlimited possibilities? Absolutely. But we must understand that there's no shortcuts in life. One way or the other, we're going to have to learn lessons. So our perspectives, we really need to be aware of our perspectives and be aware that we're always going to learn if we're open to learning and if we're adaptable. When I think of what, and I'll use nurses as an example, what nurses went through and the records, for example, in England, on what nurses experienced with the First World War. It's unbelievable. Absolutely incredible. When I think of the nurses that operate today, their stresses are just as high, and they have to go through an educational process in today's world that nurses in the early 1900s did not have to go through. But the stress was still there. So there's so many things that we experience in life. But there's always an aspect that we can learn to be better. What I have found with people that go through really, really tough times, people that have known starvation, people that have known losses of loved ones or have seen horrible situations over and over and over again, many of them refuse to back down. They'll say, no, I can use this. I will use this as leverage. So many times, there are those individuals, and I understand why they're there, why they relate the way they do. Because it's tough looking at life with eyes wide open. It is very tough living with life and your eyes wide open. Whoever is on the phone line, stay with me. I'll be with you shortly. So I want to finish this commentary with the last few words again that Philip said. All natural evidence demonstrates that despite everything, life still believes in us. Perhaps we ought to trust it and start believing in each other. And that is a huge statement of faith. That's a huge statement of what it is that we are able to to achieve and accomplish as individuals. And amazingly, that's where the miracle comes in, because we have a magic that we can utilize. And I call it magic because it really is. It's transformational. Apparently, we have a caller on the line. Let me check with that person. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Are you calling into the show?
Hi, I'm Lillian Faulkner.
Oh, hi, Lillian. I had tried to call you and I wasn't able to reach you. I'm so delighted you got my message.
I did not. I did not get anything.
Wow, I left three messages for you.
I've been in front of my phone since 10:30.
Oh, my goodness. Well, are we ready to go? Because I'm just delighted that we're absolutely going to have a conversation this evening.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm so sorry. I'm near my phone. Everything is ready. And I was nervous. And I said, oh, no.
Well, let me tell you, Lillianne, and we're on the air right now, but let me make a comment about the cell phones. Something, and this has happened not just with you, but it's happened with some of my other guests that have cell phones. And their cell phones are not ringing when somebody calls.
No, it did not ring, and no light came up. It's right in front of me, and I did not see anything either.
So maybe there needs to be something checked on the phone, because it automatically went into voicemail. So I say that to you, but that being said, your book, Winks from Above, Opening Up to Signs and Synchronicities to Receive Little Miracles Each Day, is wonderful. And I think, Lillianne, for you to be able to be so, so open with so many of your experiences. Now, you did have a rather unusual childhood. However, you were blessed in so many ways because you were able to communicate with the other side. You had an awareness of life when you were young, even though you were with a grandmother that sounds like something out of a horror movie. But regardless, you developed a resilience, and your intuitive sensory processes just were right there from the very beginning in your life. And you wrote this book during a time, and part of it was the pandemic, but you wanted people to really know that they're not alone. Mm-hmm. And that you looked back on your life with an understanding that deepened, even though you were aware of so many things intuitively, your understanding of many of the aspects of your life dramatically altered, did it not?
Yes. What I did too, because there were so many stories of my childhood that are still very vivid. But I wanted to be able to write them and be truthful, not dramatize or make it too complicated. I wanted it to be true. So I connected with my guides at night, and I asked questions to revisit all these episodes. And it was very cathartic for me, actually, to do that, because I was able to see things or understand things I had not then or even throughout my life. So that was very cathartic. And that's why after I did that, I thought it's very important for people, if they want to, of course, to be able to do something similar and be very aware of the signs, the synchronicities that are there all the time, and be able to use them to make their lives richer, happier, better.
I think when we can harmonize with what I like to describe the psychic self, along with our rational self, when we can use both of them, and we can understand that they're not opposite of each other, it's not an extreme in either level, and that those on the other side, there are so many that are very happy to be able to expand our knowledge, our understanding. It is life-changing, because you realize you're not alone.
Yes, exactly. And it's very comforting to feel that way, even when things are not good, and it does happen to everybody, to know that there is help, and it might not come right away, but eventually there will be help. And that's important to keep in mind no matter what we are facing with.
Very true. Because one of the factors that I've observed in life is that sometimes that which you aspire for, or maybe you're wanting a particular kind of relationship in your life, business, personal, spiritual, you know, emotional, it doesn't make any difference. But whatever it is that you want, the timing may come in later because you're not ready or the other aspect is not ready to be in harmony with you at that very moment. So there are things, it's almost like watching a ballet. It's as if you have to understand that there is a choreography that is going on, and much of it you can't see. You might be dancing a particular dance, but there's other aspects to a performance, and there may be other dancers that are going to be a part of your performance in life, and you have to wait until that is done to be able to move on to whatever that shift is that you might be desiring with the circumstances that are going to come together in the right way.
Yes, that's very true, and it allows to have less regret when we think that way, because we do things or they are offered to us at the right time. That's why I call myself a late bloomer, because there are so many things I did much, much, much later than normally people do, you know, like dance and so forth. But I felt I was ready, and I just did things when I was ready.
Mm-hmm.
Like writing, well, that book, I wrote it, I'm 74, and I'm starting on a new path.
And isn't that wonderful? That is absolutely wonderful. Our ancestors perhaps would never have even considered that. Because, their age at 74, you were an antique and you were going to be, you know, passing over or dropping dead day after tomorrow, according to everyone's belief system, because people didn't live that long. But in today's world, that's much different. And here you are at 74, beginning, as you said, in a brand new direction. Now, your book, interestingly enough, started off while you were recuperating from a very serious situation. And this had this occurred in 2017. And so putting your book together was part of your recovery process, if you will. And it was the summer of 2017 that something very unique was discovered. What was it?
Well, my dentist discovered I had a growth in my mouth, in my palate. And I did not know what it was. It was hard, not very painful, but hard, and it was growing. So he sent me to have x-rays and CAT scan, etc. And indeed, I had a growth in my sinus cavity. And here, nobody could tell me what it was. The only thing they would tell me is, well, we have to make a hole so we can go and do a probe. And then we put a removable plug afterwards. And I'm, what? A removable plug in my mouth? And I mean, I was not happy at all. And nobody could tell me what I had for 18 months.
Mm-mm.
Then the last doctor I saw, that was it. I became myself again. I was so angry that I was back and I was going to fight that. The doctor said, well, you know, in a case like yours, usually we remove the bone.
Oh, my.
The teeth. Yeah. And he said, then you have to go through reconstruction. And this is insane. They don't even know what I have. They're talking that way. So anyway, suddenly I was back and I decided to approach the whole thing differently. First of all, I said, you're going to have to accept what's going on, but face it in a very logical manner, and you're going to do what is necessary. If you only have 2 years, 1 year, six months, I don't know. What do you want to achieve before you go? And the day I told that to myself, I started to feel my guides and everybody was back. Until then, for several months, I was so depressed. I could not think clearly. So this time, I felt I had to call back to Europe because I knew the doctors over there, which I did. 2 weeks later, I had an appointment with a specialist, And he wanted to see me, so I flew to Brussels, that's where it was. And I saw that young doctor who decided to create a surgery because I had a tumor in my sinus cavity. And he said, we have to remove it as soon as possible. He didn't think it was cancer, but he wanted to check. And then he created a surgery that has never been done before, where he used my own tissue to seal the cavity, mm-hmm. I mean, the hole. And you will not see anything. Even my dentist, when I opened my mouth, despite the fact I had so many stitches, can't see anything. Everything was so well done.
Amazing.
So when I felt that way, and I had to stay in a hospital for 1 month with a tube going into my stomach directly, I couldn't eat normally. So I had plenty of time to think. And I had my computer, I had journals, I had a lot of things with me. And I said, wait a minute, you're lucky. You found this doctor. It was not by chance. You were guided. And so I thought about my life. I said, well, you've been guided most of your life. How did you do that? So I went back to my childhood and all the different episodes that were coming back to my mind. And I said, my God, I have to share that with others because it's not complicated. It's a mindset. Some exercises, a certain discipline, and some beliefs, of course. But it's not that complicated, and those who would like to do that would probably be able to have a much better life. So let's write a book.
Mm-hmm. That's how I thought. Well, I was fascinated with your story because you have a mixed heritage. Your dad was French, Vietnamese. French. He was French. And your mother mm-hmm. was Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time that your dad and mother got together, it was actually in, where was it? Hanoi. And that was a French colony at the time.
At the time, it was still French, yes.
So yes, it's just amazing that particular time frame. There were epidemics that were hitting Hanoi and mm-hmm. so many different things. And so you were sent by your parents to live with your grandmother that I think would make a great character in a horror movie. wow, what a disposition she had.
But, you know, since then I understood. Oh, I understand why she was the way she was. It had nothing to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I started that process quite a while back, but what I did, I not only forgave, you know, what people did, adults did to me when I was a child. I forgave everybody. Not only did I forgive, I went one nudge forward, I'm thanking them as well, because I would not be who I am today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true.
It gave me strength, it gave me resilience, it gave me a lot of things which allow me now to help others. So I started teaching, actually, because people read my book and said, we want to learn from you. So I started teaching. And it's my beta class right now. And in January, I intend to have a 6 to 8 week seminar online, and probably at least 1 weekend seminar, but in person.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm preparing all that right now. And I'm also writing, actually, because some parents asked me, why don't you write a book similar but for children?
Oh, how lovely. That's a great idea.
Yeah, I like that idea. And I have a granddaughter, too, actually, and I started playing with them, telling them stories and so forth. So that would be a lot of fun to do. So I intend to do that. And some of the parents said, how about the teenagers? We need something for the teenagers, so I'll be busy.
Well, it looks like you've got your job assignments lined up for you. Yeah. I want to go back to your story, though. There was a time, now, as difficult as your grandmother was, and she obviously carried a lot of pain inside of her and just did not, she didn't like her life. But that's beside the point. Even though she was not inclined to take care of you in a loving manner whatsoever, she didn't like herself, so she didn't like anything or anyone that was really around her. But there was a time she took you to see a healer. And you said in Brittany, in the Celtic region of France, every village had a healer. Now, this is something that I think is so interesting because the culture is thousands of years old that accepts this. And you had done something with your wrist. And when he did his healing on you, that was a very profound experience for you, wasn't it?
It was, because I could feel the warmth of his hand. But he was not touching me. And I had seen him do that with other people because I was allowed. I would make myself very small, sitting on the floor with a dog. And people would come and see him. And it was very casual, like it was done back then. There was no money exchange. Somebody would bring a bottle of wine or chicken, some fruits or whatever. That's how it was. And people would sit at the kitchen table. and that's it. And then you would do a treatment. So, yes, I've seen him several times because he was our closest neighbor. And they were probably the only adults who were fairly kind toward me. So I was always fascinated to go over there.
Well, I can understand why. Because you felt safe, and not only did you feel safe, but you also had the exposure to what we would call energy medicine today. And it was very healing. It was very soothing. And there was no threat. And you felt better whether he was doing a healing on you or not. It was just being in his presence that, and in his environment that gave you a very positive feedback. Now, you grew up and you end up being involved in modeling. You were a model. And you had such a fascinating life, and your first husband, you were, well, with him, you had gone to Paris to study and prepare for a career in international event management, but there was so much that you were exposed to, even at a very young age, and seeing things, having clairaudience, clairsentience, and clairwhatever, then this is something that was very comfortable for you because you spent a lot of time alone. And you developed this aspect of your sensory system without really understanding it to the degree of understanding you have today, but it was very comforting to you. It wasn't something that frightened you. It was something that was comforting. It was very positive. And you worked even as a translator as a young woman, an adult, and it was interesting. But your husband, Claude, he was a fascinating person, too. He did studies in the Amazon about medicinal plants, and by golly, that opened up a whole world for you, didn't it?
Yes, it did. But sometimes, you know, you just have to show up and say yes. And in many, many cases in my life, this is what I've done. Things were coming towards me, and it seemed, without much effort, like becoming a model, I never had to go knock at doors. I simply opened my mouth and said, oh, it would be so much fun, but I was too small. Like, you know, it was just in passing. And a woman I know said, oh, I know the director of the best modeling school here in Germany. I could present you to her. And I was, why not? And that's how it all started.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, she invited me to be part of her beauty contest for the best models from her school. I did not even go through her school, but she liked me. So she had, every year she organized a beauty contest for models. And she just put me with her school.
Mm-hmm.
So we were 50 to start, and I never had done modeling. It was so frightening. I said, oh my God, what am I doing here? It's horrible. But we're 50, and there was a preliminary competition. So we were 15. And then that night, I was number 5. And I don't know how I did that, because it was during the end of the Vietnam War. And my name was Li An Ho from Hanoi. That's how they decided to present me. And at two tables of people standing up, and in English, I could not understand all the words they said, but it was very, very, very nasty. And there I was, you know, marching on through the casino and trying to look nice. And I had these people booing me, and I had no clue what I had done wrong. And it's afterwards I found out they're American, probably officers, because it was an expensive event in tuxedos, etc. So, but I became 5th, and the next day I got offers for movies, and I got an offer for to become a model. Not just to become a model.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
And, you know, it was effortless. And it was, oh my God, why am I doing that to myself? You never went to a modeling school or anything.
Mm-hmm. But so that's all right. You did it.
But, you know, even now, if something happened, if my intuition said it's safe and it's moral to do that, say yes, and then figure out afterwards how to do it. So mm-hmm. That's still what I'm doing now.
Absolutely. Now, you ended up being married to your first husband for 8 years. You divorced. Mm-hmm. And then you met Dave. And you say that mm-hmm. he's the love of your life. And, of course, there's a lot that goes on. And he's in the military. And, of course, many times people in the military move. And this was a case.
Mm-hmm. Every 2 years.
Yes. And so you moved to Korea. And mm-hmm. you mentioned Mr. D. Now, you went into a very, very deep depression, but you were just not doing well at all. You go through the depression, and you are able to utilize it eventually in a way that allows you to get out of that depression. However, you found that you had to just surrender to it. But you bring something else up that I found very interesting, and that was when you decided you were going to become a healer. And this was in 2010, and you mm-hmm. were diagnosed with lung chlamydia and mononucleosis. Now, just either one of those by themselves are doozies. And no matter what they did, it wasn't working, and you wanted to see a healer, Mr. D. I have yes. heard about him many, many, many years ago, and I don't think I've ever heard anybody else talk about a Mr. D, and he was quite renowned for his healing talents.
Yes, and he's the one who told me when I was in my 20s, because he was all family healer, so I would see him at least once a year. And he told me early on, he said, why don't you do what I do, become a healer? And he was testing me each time. I said, you see, it works. You have to do it. And I was not ready. And because I had seen my grandmother do things which were scary in some mm-hmm. ways or mean, because I know that she had the capability of doing all that, but she was not using it in the right way. So I was very, very scared that I would have that threat in me. And I would use what I learned the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just did not want to go there. I just did not want to be tempted. So, yeah, he reminded me periodically, and this time I got so sick. And, of course, it was when my husband was traveling in the military. He was in Pakistan because of all the floods for 5 weeks. And I could not drive by myself because it was 9 hours away. And I just could not go. So when he came back, he drove me to my healer. And in 5 days, well, first of all, he saw me and said, you know why you're so sick? And so he brought up the fact that it's a reminder of what I should do. And I had refused all along, and now it's time to think about it again. So, I told him I would do it. And I will. He did not want to teach because he promised his wife he never would teach. But
interesting.
I told him that I would find someone. And about 6 weeks later, I was in the U.S. And it was December, and a friend wanted to take me around the Great Lakes because some of the villages are transforming to Oliver Twist village. I mean, it's very charming, I was told. Well, there was a snowstorm, so everything was canceled. And my friend said, well, nearby, there is somebody who could read cards for her. Would you like to do that? Yeah. So we went. And as soon as we entered, I saw that tall man who looked at me intently and said, we already met. And I said, probably in another lifetime. So he took us into his office, and he told my friend to sit on a chair. I sat on the couch, and he sat in his own chair, closed his eyes, and he went into channeling.
Mm-hmm.
For almost 2 hours, he told me my entire life. I never had met the man.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend did not know him too well, so she never talked about me either. And during that download, he said, you've been contacted for the third time to become a healer. Don't fail this time. The two last time, you turn your back, and you were 39 and 49. What? Etc. It was so eerie almost to have that man whom I absolutely did not know tell me my entire life with things I almost had forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
That was so strange. And then reminding me, just at the time when I was thinking, well, yeah, I said yes, but I'm not sure I really want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me, you have to do it. So when I went back to Paris, I found somebody, and that's when I started.
Mm-hmm.
With a shaman, and so.
It's fascinating.
So anyway,
yes.
Again, another very strange story, but it's one after the other, and that's why I encourage people, you know, to look at through their lives, because many times people have stories and they don't put two and two together sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting how things happen if we look back and analyze, sometimes years apart, but yet there is the link.
Yes, very much so. It's mm-hmm. a fascinating observation when you take the time to do the observation and you write it down. And this is something that I know I've encouraged people to do, to write down what their experiences are when they're developing their skills, when they're finding out about this aspect of themselves, because it's meant to be understood. It is a part mm-hmm. of us. It is not separate. It doesn't belong to just a few chosen people. No, not at all. It belongs to everyone. And yes. I want to follow up with one of your stories that you have in the book, and you have a number of stories. It was about a stranger in a restaurant. You were in your early 20s. Mm. You were in Paris. You and a mm-hmm. girlfriend were going to have a dinner together. Mm-hmm. And there was a very strange occurrence with a man in the restaurant that you did not know at all. That mm-hmm. walks, got up from where he was sitting and walked over to the two of you. Share with mm-hmm. my audience what happened.
Well, it was It was indeed very strange. Yes, he came towards me. He was very well dressed, very dapper. He looked maybe Indian a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Paris. He looked a foreigner. But yet when he spoke perfectly French. So he asked me for a coin, a 5-franc coin. At the time, they were large coins. That's before the euro, when we still had our money. And I thought, oh, God, well, he needs money to buy himself a drink or something. But I was very curious, and I just gave him the 5 francs. It's not a whole lot. It's a dollar. He put it in my hand, put his hand on top of it, and held my hand between both hands. And he started to tell me my life. You have done this, you had that, you had, and I was, what? How does he, I don't know the man. And he went on, and then he said, you're with the man right now, but not for long. You're going to meet someone, and it's going to be about traveling very far away, etc., etc. And indeed, a few weeks later, I met my first husband.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, we went to the Amazon together. So that was one thing. But there were more and more and more. And basically, everything he told me of my future has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so strange. And then he was done. And I asked him, he gave me back the coin. And I looked surprised. Said, oh, that was just for the connection between us. And I asked him, how many times a day do you do that? He said, I don't know. Sometimes I have, it comes to me. I know I have to share to the person because I'm just a mouthpiece, basically. Something I had to pass on what was downloaded to me.
Mm-hmm.
That was for you, so you know. But he said he can't do more than 2 people a day because it's too tiring for him.
Mm-hmm. It's really amazing how people will become, I like to call them facilitators for information. And what a special experience that was. And again, that's one of the dots in the roadmap of your life. And you share it because you want people to know that if they pay attention to their own synchronicities, that their life will be a lot richer. And I think that that is true. It's something that we learn. And you make a comment in your book, boy, I could relate to this. There are times when we know, but our brain is quick to squelch the input because it doesn't always seem to make sense. Oh, my goodness, how many times I've done that. And I think just about anybody, if they're thoughtful enough about that kind of a statement, they'll realize that they will say, gee, I wish I had followed through with XYZ, whatever that XYZ impulse or vision or, you know, just a feeling inside yourself is. It's just like, do it now. And, okay, I'll do it now. And it's amazing how accurate it is. But we get sidetracked. We get sidetracked. I don't know of anybody that doesn't get sidetracked at one time or another. You talk about your sister, Anne Marie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is very important because you share the story about a phone call that your sister received.
Mm-hmm.
And share that story, too, because I think it's significant.
Oh, my brother-in-law passed away very abruptly. He had a heart attack and he died. And 2-3 days later, my nephew was with my sister. I mean, he was staying with her, and under the shower, he felt that he wanted to know how his dad was doing. He wanted a sign of some sort. Well, he was finished. He came to have breakfast with my sister, and the phone rang. At the time, that's when everybody had an answering machine, so they just let it ring. And the music came up, and it was a classical piece, that my brother-in-law absolutely loved. So my sister and my nephew got up to see who called. They could not recognize the number at all. So they knew that my brother-in-law was okay.
Mm-hmm.
That was a sign. I mean, how do you explain that?
Yes.
I mean, who receives music just like that, first of all? Typically, we don't, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And no voice, nothing, just music.
Just music. Your synchronicities, your stories of your own personal experiences, I think, gives the reader a chance to say, okay, I need to pay attention to things because I have these feelings, or I see this, or I hear this. And mm-hmm. it's something that is very, very significant, and it makes a huge difference in our lives. Now, your mm-hmm. book is called Winks from Above, and mm-hmm. you were a finalist in the Reader's Favorite Review, and that was something that just is wonderful for your very first book. But it's opening up to signs and synchronicities to receive little miracles each day. Now, you have a website that people can go to. And that
I receive more awards. I receive 6 awards, actually. I have four finalists, but I also have number one and a silver medal.
Wonderful. So you've gotten 3 awards for your book, Winks from Above.
6 altogether.
Oh, 6 altogether. My goodness.
Book Excellence Award. And that's... I have Book Excellence Award. I have so many here. Global Book Award as well. And Reader's Favorite as well. So anyway.
Lillianne, your website is winksfromabove.com. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So people can go to that website. I want to thank you for being my guest. I'm so glad you called into studio and that we were to have this conversation. So maybe check with your phone company to find out why the phone did not ring, if it's on some kind of a mute that you're not aware of. But regardless, it worked out just fine, and here we are. We've had this wonderful conversation, and I look forward to your next publication when you come out with your next book. I wish you nothing but continued success.
The children's book, probably. And I saw The Woodcutter and the Tree in your book, and that inspired me. I want to read them because it deals with magic in many ways.
Oh, and yes, it does, in more ways than you could think.
So you have, that's when you have the magic hat as well that won an award. And I want to read these because, again, I want to write something maybe with fairy tale or something, but with a message for the children and to empower them, to show them they have capabilities, etc. So I want to find a way to write, and I want to read your books first.
Oh, well, bless your heart. I'm going to say goodbye right now, Lillianne Fortna, and her last name is spelled Fortna. But go to her website, winksfromabove.com. Thank you again for being my guest. I'm going to say goodbye. We're going to carry on, take a little bit of a break, and I'll be back with you in just a moment. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to Mrs. Sebo's Classics.com.
This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you.
Well, my guest tomorrow evening, yes, we are going to be traveling to Sweden to talk to Tino Benz. Fascinating man, and he's very much involved with technology. We're going to be discussing tech-life balance, and it's a delight to interact with someone that is so deeply involved with technology that he himself had to figure out what he needed to do to change his demeanor regarding the overuse of technology, so he had time for his beautiful wife and family. Then, yes, we're coming up to the last week of July. We're going to be talking about the troubles with miracles with Stephen Steele, and then Cure the Causes Cookbook with Dr. Christiana Rahm. Now, this is really quite interesting because this woman is a scientist, and, well, her story is a very profound one. And remember what Hippocrates said? Food is medicine. Well, by golly, that is a factor that is more real than we realize. And then you are going to, on Wednesday of next week, you'll be able to hear the audio clip of my second television show, and it's going to be for the full hour, and it's on super aging. And with every one of my television shows, we did show number 4, and that we did yesterday. We're going to be editing that. And all of the videos are going to be going up on my website. And if you're in the state of Washington on Channel 22, you are going to find that you can access it through the Thurston County Media. And it is every Tuesday. There is that one show, because I only have one television show a month. Every month, that show is shown every single Tuesday of that month until the next program comes up. So it's really amazing. I mean, I just absolutely love it. And we had a fabulous time. And show number 4, show number 3, which is airing the very first Tuesday of August. And that's going to be there for the entire month of August on that channel. Now, you also will be able to go into my video page on my website. And my videos, all 3 of the videos will be there. Number 3 is going to be put up pretty soon. And number 3 is about regenerative medicine stem cell research. And so that is going to be aired. So we've had 3 shows so far, one on human trafficking, the second one on super aging. The third one is going to be on regenerative medicine. The fourth one that we just finished yesterday is on faces of leadership. And this is a program that it was just wonderful to have the guests that I had. And one of my guests flew in to be in the station actually with me live instead of being on Zoom. So it's just amazing what we are doing and what we're able to accomplish. So just know you can go into YouTube and you look for the Donna Sebo Show Special Editions. And in my newsletter and also on my website, the links will be provided that you can download. So every month you can go in to that environment and you can see each of the shows that I have done, and the latest one that will be up there. So I wanted to be sure and mention that. Also, the author showcase, we are going to be adding some authors. And the author showcase developed because they are people that want to be featured in the showcase. They are individuals that are helping to support this programming. And this is very, very special. And so they are, whatever interviews they've had with me, those are put right up. The links are put right there underneath them, and you're able to see that for yourself and go right to their interviews. So all of that being said, and then I have 2 appearances that are coming up
before the end of this month. And the one is on the 26th. And for those of you in Washington, I will be the keynote speaker at the Psychic Spectrum at the Poodle Dog in Fife, Washington. So go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, and you'll find all of the details, how to get there, the hours, everything else. And then on the 29th and the 30th, I'm a vendor as well as a keynote speaker on both days. And that is going to be the Embassy Suites in Bellevue, Washington, the Me, We Expo. And we're going to be talking about that on Monday so that we'll be able to share more information with you about that event that will be coming up the following weekend. And there's just so much that's happening, and it's very, very exciting. And my goodness, to try to keep up with technology and the various things that are available and even becoming more available, it really gets to be challenging. I don't know how you feel about it, but if you're like me and you're getting over 100 emails a day, and heavens, if you're out of the office for a day, that doubles it, and so you've got a lot of stuff to go through. It really is quite amazing. And one of the things that my friends and I were discussing is that, unlike in the past, in today's world, there are many ways to communicate. You can call on the phone, you can text, you can send emails, you also have FaceTime, you have all kinds of different apps that can be used. One of my friends was talking about how her granddaughter is using a particular system, and she said, "Oh, hey, Grandma, you need to use this because this is what I'm using with all my friends," so on and so forth. So it's really quite a challenge many times to be sure that you know how to reach people, because for some, maybe they don't use their phone very much. For others, they use it for everything. It's their lifeblood. And for others, they may say, "Yeah, I use it every once in a while, but only when I'm traveling." So you have all of these different variables that our ancestors just didn't use. But that's okay, because life is full of change. And that is something that is happening for so many of us in an absolutely incredible way. And boy, oh boy, it is really, really a fascinating period to be alive and to experience. You know, I can remember standing in my grandmother's kitchen. She was 91 years old, and I looked at her, and she was a little tiny person. She was like 4 feet tall, and she's in her kitchen, and she goes up to her phone, and she is talking on her phone, and she says, "Excuse me, I have another call coming in." And for some reason, I just observed that, and I thought about it. Now, we wouldn't think twice about that today. But I was thinking of her. She was 91 years old, standing in her kitchen, telling someone, "Wait a moment, I have another call coming in." And when I think of the time when she was born in 1900, and how she was horse and buggy in the state of Virginia, they didn't have cars at that time, at least not where she lived. She was on a farm. And she experienced in her lifetime flying on a plane. And the planes that were built at that time were very different from the planes that we fly in and we take for granted every single day. So much she saw change, not just in transportation, but also in medical care. When she was, let's say, 19 years old, she got typhoid fever. She lost all of her hair. The only reason she survived is because she was packed in ice in an old-fashioned bathtub. And that's what kept her alive. Not only did she lose all of her hair, but she also lost all of her teeth, because all of her teeth turned black. Her fever was so intense, the body was fighting with every ounce of energy it had. But there really wasn't anything in the way of medicine, being on the farm the way she was, that would make a difference. So she ended up wearing false teeth all of her life, which presented challenges at times. And I look at that and I think of what she experienced, what she saw. Transportation with trains was much different at that time.
She lived through the Depression. She lived through so many aspects of life. You are living through history at this time. Enjoy the journey. I'll talk to you on Monday. Bye for now. And no, tomorrow I'll be here in studio. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.